Hospitalitychain.com, the world's first online hub designed for the hospitality, culinary, and catering industry. From leading food and beverage brands to professional food service equipment, Hospitalitychain.com makes sourcing simple. Search, select, buy direct, and save all in one global marketplace. Welcome to another episode of the Fell Into Food podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Fell, aka Chef Jeff. And with me today, I have the beautiful Ryan Baby Babich.
That's me.
Registered dietitian. And I got to give some pre-context that this is shoot number two because one got messed up. You know, he won't take responsibility, but Brad behind the scenes, he...
We forgive him.
Yeah.
It wasn't his fault.
It wasn't his fault. It was SD.
Yeah.
SD.
Tech issues.
Stupid tech.
Yeah.
It's great when it works, but when it doesn't. But thanks for joining me. I really appreciate you taking the time to come out. Just give everyone a tiny background. Again, registered dietitian. I don't know what the heck LDN is and what other letters you got behind your name.
Yeah. So for me, it's just RD and then LDN. RD is more of a countrywide licensure. So everybody who goes through the program as a dietetics will take the RD exam that licenses you to practice. But the other part of that is like LDN is more like state licensure. So LDN, well, RD is registered dietitian. LDN is licensed dietitian nutritionist. So, and part of the reason that they do the state licensure is because you could call yourself a nutritionist and then all of a sudden you know everything about dietetics and stuff like that, which is not a real thing. Like you have to go through the state test. You have to go through the regional and you just have to make sure that you're completing. You have to pass the test. So it's not just like, hey, guess what? Jeff's a nutritionist now because Ryan's a dietitian and just bestowed it upon him. So it's something that they take very seriously to make sure that you are actually licensed.
And anything we say today, don't take it from me. I am not a licensed dietitian or registered dietitian or any other letter. I just like food and eat it. And I went to school, but not in that vein and length that you went to. But I also want to give some context of how we met. And so people know, so we used to work together in two prior lives, two different companies actually, and it was the separate stints. So first we worked together at Loyola University in one of the dining halls and things were happening. And then you end up going back to hospital, right? Is that where you went to?
Yeah, I went back to hospitals for a little bit. And then you made the call and were like, hey, Ryan, I need you back.
That's true. Then I went to another university and I was like, I need my number two back. And what's really exciting to see, though, is that, you know, you went from number two to number one at that location. But then, you know, you've kind of found your own footing now in your own place. So I want you to talk about a little bit, you know, now you're in the hospital set. You're back in the hospital setting, but you're the primo. You're the head honcho, right?
Yeah,
you run the show.
I'm Hefe, man.
And what have you learned now going and being the number, like, just from scratch? Like, you have to make the decisions. You've got to do what's right for everyone. What that's been like and like what you've learned so far in that journey. Because it's been, what, 2-3 years now?
Yeah, we're going February would be 3 years. So, yeah, it's 3 years kind of outside of Jeff Fell's shadow. So, but with the – I would say from number two to number one, I would say that I really learned a lot just kind of watching how you operated and just what you were handling, whether it was client relations, whether it was dealing with vendors, whether it was dealing with staff or anything like that. So I took a lot of that and just kind of mirrored what you were doing. And then I'd call you from time to time, be like, hey man, what do you think about X, Y, and Z? What should we do about
that? I think we do that with everyone though, right? Like, I mean, I know I still tap into a couple of resources. Yeah. Everyone, I'm like, I have a situation. I don't know what to do, especially when I was in operations, because it's just like, you're not going to go through every situation that is available out there. And it's really nice to have someone or a mentor, or, you know, whether you call them that or not, it's great to have somebody to fall back onto to have those conversations. So do you have any other mentors in your life that you work with on a regular basis or that you stay in contact with?
Yeah, I'd still call you from time to time. So I call you from time to time. My current district manager, my current vice president, they're very helpful and I can reach out to them and they help me out with whatever's going on. And even just more from just operational, like I think I've realized more that kind of the things that were going on that you were doing. In my head, I was like, oh man, Jeff knows exactly what he's doing all the time. And then you realize after the fact, it's like, I think that was one of the big things that I learned about going into number one, is that there's a lot of decisions that you have to make and a lot of stuff you've dealt with before. But then there's people like for the mentorship that you go back to and you say, hey, what should I do about this? I'm having a difficult relationship with this, or I'm having a problem with this employee. How do I handle those types of conversations? And it's a lot of bouncing ideas off of people you know or people you've worked with before. And even just the higher ups have been very helpful for me and just giving me the opportunity to lead the team, but also just, I guess, kind of growing and developing in my own capacity, because now I'm starting to develop people underneath me. And I think that's where the fun part starts happening, because then for me, having those conversations of stuff that you've already dealt with, it's gratifying, because then you see your people grow and develop and you want your people to turn into leaders. And I think that's ultimately what you want in a good leader, is somebody who's creating more leaders. And I would say that is kind of what happened when you left Dominican, when we were working there together. We fixed it, and then you put the team in place that was going to run it after you took over a new account. And that's the sign of a great leader, is somebody who's going to put in people who can run the operation. And I think that's what happened. And that's what I'm working on now with my team, is how do we build those managers and those leaders who are going to be the next step. Because the more that I'm in food service, the more I realize that the old guard is kind of moving out, and our generation is becoming the team that's taken over. And it's now who's my team? Who am I going to rely on? Who's my Ryan Babbage that I'm going to be picking next to kind of lead the team? And I think that's been eye-opening in my leadership journey so far.
And as you do the leadership, I don't think enough people talk about the EQ side, right? The emotional intelligence side, and how that plays into decisions that are made and what we do.
Yeah.
Everyone just talks about business and okay, we're going to put you through this training and that training. And no one takes the time to really go through the emotional intelligence side to understand, okay, well, do you know what personality type you're talking to? Do you know how to manage people?
Yeah.
And a great one that I've used, and you wouldn't think it relates, but the five love languages, right? It's more of a personal relationship book.
Sure.
However, if you know how someone ticks, even on that side, if you know if they're a gift giver, if they're words of affirmation, if they're acts of service, you can then tailor how to get them back. So what do you do, if any, with your staff now, or what techniques have you used to help support them in that avenue?
I think for me, it's been more of you have to build relationships with your team. Like, there's no way around it. Like, if you're somebody who comes in and just is beating a hammer and trying to get people to do what you want them to do, it's never going to happen. That's not how leadership works. That's not how good leaders work. You get to know your people. And I think for me, that's kind of step one, is figuring out who your people are. Ask questions. Find out what's going on in their life. But there's a fine line between being a good leader and then also making sure that you're doing your job effectively. Because you don't want to get too personal, where you're getting into people's business that maybe you shouldn't be aware of. But you also don't want to be too hard, because then again, people aren't going to buy into what you want to do. And if ultimately your goal is to lead your account to the next level, or make it a high profile account, or whatever the case may be. But I think one is learning your people first, and you have to spend time with everybody. You have to, even if it's just, I mean, I come into the kitchen on a daily basis and I'll go talk to everybody. I'll say, hey, how you doing today? What's going on?
That's probably the most important thing, is to say hi, because then they know you care about them.
Absolutely.
And they'll die on a sword when they know you care. You could be a bit of a prick to some degree, like in general, right? People will give you forgiveness because of, hey, he says hi to me every day. He cares about what's going on in my life and what I've got going on. And I know that's definitely helped when I built relationships and teams, understanding people. You know, it's just so understated in our industry that no one gets that kind of support. So, you know, take an Enneagram test, do the Myers-Briggs, do as many of them, find out yourself, because I think self-realization of what you are and who you are, because 20 some old Jeff and late 30 something Jeff are two different people.
Yeah, for sure.
I think it changed when I was at Loyola, right? I think that's when I started reading stuff, listening to podcasts and to other people, and started to change my tone, because before that it was dictator and you will do exactly what I say, and if you don't. And we saw that doesn't work, especially when you're leading. I mean, how big is your team?
Right now, it's about I've got 100 employees and probably, I think, 7 managers.
Right. So even if you're not in direct contact with every single person every day, right, there's still some sort of relationship that you have to build with them and then to those managers, and you have to model what it is. You know, my motto is I can have empathy for somebody and what they're going through, but I can't feel sorry. Like you said, even though we say emotional intelligence,
yes,
that doesn't mean you bring your emotions into that conversation. You have correct to kind of, to some degree, leave that at the door. You'll hear a lot of sad stories or sob stories. Yeah. And if you eat into that, it can put you down a slippery slope because then you're making decisions based off of just emotions and not yes rational business. So there's that fine line. Again, empathy, I say empathy, no sympathy.
Sure. Or detachment. Like I've heard people use detachment as that kind of terminology to where, you're involved and you want to be there and you want to be a part of the solution because ultimately, like, you want to help your employees. You want to make sure they come to work. You want to make sure that they're taken care of while they're at work, while they're safe. But then at the end of the day, like, you have to make decisions, like you said, for the business, but while managing your employees. And so it's that fine line of, like, I have to be able to detach at certain points because, I mean, the amount of emotional things that I have to deal with on a daily basis, kind of like you're talking about, most people don't realize that stuff. And that's where I think a lot of that plays into.
So let's jump right into some technology with being, you know, at the hospital. And before we got on camera, we started talking a little bit about, and I'm really intrigued to hear in that space how you're using technology to advance, you know, how you're serving patients, doctors, whatever you've got going on. So maybe explain the setup that you've got at sure your location and sure then what technology you're using.
Yeah, I would say we have gone through a process of upgrading our technology in the hospital because the way that the hospital had the kitchen run before was more of an outdated model to where it was people were writing down menus on hand and we had to change that whole process. So I would say the first part was just on our patient service side, which is the side that goes up to the patient. So hospital food service is a little bit different than, say, like a higher ed or like a business dining or like a restaurant or anything like that, where you do have different avenues of food service that are happening. So patient services is one that goes up to the hospital patients. You've got retail, which is more of we're serving patients in a kind of like a, almost like
food,
a restaurant.
Food court.
Yeah, food court is
and
a good way to put it.
How many stations or how many, what you got going in food court?
I would say in the food court, we've got deli, we've got like a allergy station, we've got entree, we've got grill, we've got pizza, and we've got
plus
like an
you've
expo.
Got kind of a full.
Yeah,
a full
we've got a full breast, so people will come in and get an opportunity to kind of pick what they want. And then in that situation, what we have is like this kind of QR code technology. So what'll happen is somebody will place an order, say like a cheeseburger or something like that, and then you've got your screen here. You'll hit the button for what you ordered, and it could be 5 or 6 different things. Hit the buttons, print out the ticket. It'll give you a QR code that you read. You then take that to the register, and we have what they call is kind of like self-checkout technology. And literally that barcode can be read by the cameras on that system. And
so is yours the you put it under and it sees the barcode type thing, or are you scanning it
like a
traditional retail
yeah
type?
A little bit of both. So there's the picture taking capabilities, and then there's also the barcode scanning technology. So that all kind of plays into that. So again, say it's something that may not have a barcode, say like a Snickers or something like that, and then you use a maybe like a soda cup. The camera will take pictures of it. It gets the size of what it is, and then it rings up on the pad of what it would look like.
That makes sense.
Yeah,
that's pretty cool.
Yeah. So the retail side is that. The patient side is more. And again, this technology, I think a lot of places have kind of transitioned to more of what we call the room service model. And in the room service model, it's more of they call down, they'll place their order. That goes to a computer system. They put in their orders based on whatever their diet order is. It restricts what they're able to order, and then from there, they'll print out the ticket. The ticket goes out to the tray lines. The tray line has the ticket print out in several different locations. So it might be the starter has the ticket with everything on it. You've got the hot side that's got the hot product on there. And then you've got the cold side that's got the cold product on there. So what'll happen is then everybody adds to the tray line. The tray goes down. Everybody kind of checks what's going on. And then when it gets to the end, then you will see it pops up on your screen as this is the tray for this room. And then it gives you how long it's been printed, because ideally we want to do our thing within 45 minutes to an hour. And so what we do is it'll show up on the screen. The employees also have tablets. So then they have one, they can place order on their tablets, but then they can also see if their tray has been made. And so there's a color coordination scheme, and this is a little this might be a little too much, but it's like it prints out blue, and then when it goes to the cart before it goes up to the floor, it goes green, and then when it's about to be delivered, it turns purple. So might be a little bit too much, but it's
Technicolor dream.
Yeah.
It's like me and my spreadsheets.
Yeah. And so it works out. It's a very good system, but just from a technology standpoint, that's some of the stuff that we use, just from a patient side and a little bit more from a retail side as
use
well.
Use any AI?
No, not yet.
No,
not yet.
Do you use any, like personally, like to help you, like even though a company may not use it, do you use any sort of tools?
No, I don't. I haven't really dove into AI too much. I know it's definitely an up and coming thing, and people are concerned about it just because
it's
of
dope.
Is it really?
Oh my God!
What have you used it for?
Oh, dude, this podcast.
Yeah,
I've used so many different things that can read scripts, summarize, shorten clips. Shout out to Canva, like the where they
oh yeah, I love
Canva and their AI. Well, yeah, when we were using it, but that was back in the day.
Yeah.
When it was here's just a template and type in your stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Now they've got type in what you want, remove backgrounds, put backgrounds.
Oh,
in,
really?
Magic erase, like crazy stuff. Now.
Okay,
so it's like full blown. Not to mention that, like when writing recipes, menus,
yeah.
All the information that you would normally need as a chef, there's so much information, right, of different cuisines and what goes together and the
sure.
and the palette of a plate. With AI, you can now basically, hey, this is what I'm looking for. This
yeah.
is my clientele.
Okay.
Spit me out. And then with the knowledge that one has, you can then tailor it and be like, that may not work correctly or whatever, but you can seasonality it.
Interesting.
It's insane.
Wow.
You can type how many people,
okay.
what size portion you want, print out. The recipe that you're looking, type of recipe you're looking for, an ingredient grocery list. It's absolutely insane, which what you can do and how fast it moves.
Wait, so how do you, me knowing nothing about AI, how do you access AI? Do you have to like plug your finger into a computer or something?
No, just everything's web-based. And now like ChatGPT has now got their-
That's the big one?
Well, it depends on what you're going for. There's so many startups in the AI space. You have to weed through some of the crap because there are, I mean, everyone's trying to jump on that bandwagon.
Oh, sure.
But with Microsoft's involvement, jumping on to OpenAI, I mean, they have the app now that you can literally, it's right on your phone. Google's got Bard. They just released a new one that's, I don't even know, but you can like, it's got like video capability where it can like see what you're doing.
Oh, interesting.
And then you can like they put a picture of a squirrel underneath it or something. And it's like, you have a picture of a squirrel and then you start drawing. It's like, looks like you're drawing and making it do blah, blah. It's absolutely
oh, wow.
mind-blowing.
Interesting. Okay.
What it can do in the integrations. So it's just a really cool space that I think more food professionals will, I hope, jump into because of the efficiencies that it'll do, especially as culinarians become less and less. Because it's such a hard, our space, it takes a messed up person to get into our space, in my opinion. I don't think any sane person is like, I can't wait to go into food service.
Yeah.
And then they get in and they're like, oh. And then, but we're gluttons for punishment. We stay yes, in it. We yes. stay in it.
Yes.
For the love of the passion of the food, the people. I know you've talked about before how, you know, it's about the patients and helping them. That's why you went into dietetics and got that degree. But knowing what you do know, maybe it's a lot, maybe it's a little. Do you have any ethical concerns regarding technology, whether it's AI, social media, anything? Like, are you one of those that like is at night and like robots are going to take over the world?
I think I do have a little bit of that in me because you're always just like, all right, I've seen Terminator enough. I know what's going to happen. But I think, again, when it comes to like ethical concerns, and I would say just from my mindset from like a hospital setting, like hospitals are very protective of people's personal information, like very protective. We follow HIPAA guidelines, which is basically you trying to protect people's personal information. So that's like making sure, like especially when it comes to like patients' tickets, because their information is on the ticket. Because when you go to a room, you have to be able to identify the patient, and you have to identify them by name and date of birth. But we also get rid of those documents when we're done with the meal, because again, that's people's protective information. You want to make sure it's handled, so we get it shredded. But in terms of like ethical qualms with AI, again, yeah, I think everybody's a little bit leery when it comes to new technology before there's this whole jump on period to where everybody's on board. Mm-hmm. Kind of like it was the same thing with like iPhones and like cell phones and that kind of stuff.
Or the internet as a whole.
Yeah, the internet as a whole. I think a lot of people were really kind of reticent about what was going to happen. And I mean, we're talking, we've been into about 20 years now to where you've seen how internet has just changed the landscape of everything. And I mean, some may say for the good, some may say for the bad. I would say you can find the bad, but you can also use the good in that capacity as
yeah,
well, too.
Yeah, how you look at those situations. There's always going to be good and evil, yeah. good, bad, and what outweighs the other, right? It's almost one of those, it's almost like a restaurant review,
yeah.
right? the place could be phenomenal, but how many good reviews do they get versus how many bad reviews? Right? It's always everyone wants to post their crap experience, but when it comes to the good one, they don't take the time to be like, wow, the restaurant was this and it was clean. Yeah. I mean, you'll get some people out there that that's just what they do, but you see the bad more than the good, even though that restaurant may be an overall very, very well-ran establishment. Or right. Reviews on Amazon, anything, right? You always see the bad, not the good.
Yeah. And I would say even in that capacity, I do use that as part of my reference when I'm looking at stuff, because I want to make sure that, again, I understand kind of the balance between the two, and you're going to run into a situation where somebody might just be like review bombing you to like try and ruin your product.
Of course. But,
and again, I think a lot of that comes from word of mouth too. And I think that's something that one of the things that I've really been interested in recently is just kind of changing the culture and trying to get people to understand like change is a good thing and things are going to happen that are ultimately going to be for the better. But how do you deal with that when you're in that space, when it's rough? You know what I mean? And I think that's an interesting kind of thought process, because when it comes to like, again, reviews and those types of things, people are going to, you're going to hear a lot more negative before you hear positive. That doesn't mean positive isn't happening. And that doesn't mean people aren't talking about it. It just might be the people who are, may have had a bad experience or are a little more vocal, because if you had a bad experience, you had a bad experience and you just want to get fixed. And I think part of that is how you handle that. Are you going to be the type of person who's going to go fix it? How do you make it so you can get this customer back and then ultimately fix what their concern is? Because at the end of the day, you want them to come back. Like, you want people to enjoy your space. I mean, a lot of what I do is a self-reflection of me, because I like what I'm doing and I want people to come and enjoy the place. And like, we do like holiday parties and stuff like that, like personal like holiday parties. And like, I got family members who are like, oh yeah, we're going to start at 4 o'clock, shows up at 5:30, 6 o'clock.
Oh,
I'm
of
like,
course they do.
And then it's my turn to like prepare food. And I'm like, we're eating at 4 o'clock. And then they show up at 4:30. Like, what's going on? I run at 4 o'clock, man. I run caterings and stuff like that. Like, that's what's going to happen. Like, if I say 4 o'clock, it's going to be 4 o'clock. But going back to the whole review part of this thing is that's when you kind of rebuild that customer. And I think a lot of it is word of mouth. And that's where a lot of things that I've known, like stuff that you and I have kind of talked about personally, that were like, hey, you should check this out, or this is a great product, or something along that lines. That's where you really start to see traction, is when you've got other people talking about your product. And I think that's what I'm working on right now, is trying to figure out the kind of mechanics of how that.
Well, that, I don't think technology will ever replace that human element of the personal. Okay, I know I take somebody's word with what severity, right, or degree. And then that's what I want to believe, right? If somebody that I'm like, yeah, okay, and they say something, I'm like, maybe I'll look into it. But
right.
If it's somebody and you ask and you go seeking and they're like, hey, I would suggest you do this, we had a great, you're 9 times out of 10 going to be like, that's, I'm going to go with that service, that restaurant, whatever it might be, because that's just the word of mouth. So going from the computer machine to the body, the human machine,
sure.
Being a dietitian, what are your general thoughts on biohacking, all the stuff that's come out? You know, there's sauna, and I want to touch on that because I was actually up in Colorado and did some saunaing.
Oh, really?
The most amazing thing.
It was like high altitude sauna?
So my brother-in-law, they live out in about 45 minutes west of Denver, and he's got a big barrel sauna.
Oh, nice.
And so after all day being out on the mountain, snowboarding and whatnot, we went in the sauna, and that bad boy, it's like 165, 170
Ooh,
degrees.
Man, you come out about 10 pounds lighter.
And so like getting to it, because we have to go to his backyard, I'm like all bundled up in like a hoodie, and because I do not like cold. And when you get in, you get out, it's like, just you spread your arms. You're like, give me the cold air. We stayed in for about 15, 20 minutes, but the sleep that I got.
Really?
Everything else. So what are your, as a dietitian, from a dietitian's perspective, what are your thoughts in general on those type of things, biohacking? Again, it could be sauna, cold plunge. I know Gary Breckus came out now with methylation stuff, like in general.
Yeah, I would say I think it's a big field nowadays. I think a lot of people are looking into longevity. They're looking into how do we take care of ourselves to live past 100. Like, everybody's trying to figure out that, I think it's centenarian or octogenarian, or there's something where it's like they're trying to live over 100. But I would say for me personally right now, one of the things that I've really been looking at is, and it's funny because you bring that up, when I was doing my dietetics program, you have to do an internship, and part of your internship is you have to do kind of presentations on what's up and coming in the nutrition field. Now, granted, this is probably, I've been a dietitian for about almost 10, 11 years now, but back then when I was doing it, it was called, and it probably still is this, but it was called nutrigenomics. And so what it does is it looks at what your body needs based on kind of your body type, what basically, it's like taking scans and trying to figure out how do we use nutrition to improve your overall health. Now, ultimately, that's what dietetics is, but it's more, I would say, depending on the field and what you're looking in, is going to determine how it's addressed. So when I mean that, like I say, for example, like if you're doing a clinical route as a dietitian, you're using food to help somebody, but it might be somebody who's already had some kind of like a heart attack or is dealing with diabetes or something like that. Nutrigenomics says, okay, let me look at your genome, try to figure out what you're deficient in based on that. And then from there, we're gonna change your diet pattern around that. So it's a preemptive type of a system. It was kind of in the infancy when I started looking at it. And I think it's still something that's being researched, and I think a lot of people are still involved with it. I don't think it's as prevalent as some of these other things, kind of like you're talking about, like the sauna and the cold plunge. And I think with that, the sauna and the cold plunge, I mean, you see a lot of the benefits from that, whether it's just kind of the cold restricting, the brown fat production, those types of things. But I also think, though, too, like saunas are expensive. Let's just be honest,
they
man.
Are
like
expensive.
Sauna's expensive. Cold plunge, you could probably get a...
They make them now for like $100. You fill them up with water, you keep them outside.
I mean, you can get a
Rubbermaid. I mean, we're up here in the Midwest, the upper Midwest. It doesn't
you can,
take
you
much
can find
for
a pond on the side of the
six
road.
6 to 7 months of the year where it's cold.
Yeah. And I would say that I think even for those types of things, like I think there's health benefits to it. I think a lot of people are looking to them now. And I would say there's people that I follow currently who I think are in that space who are also looking at how does like the average person go about trying to make some of these changes in their life to make a difference. And it's funny because a lot of it's very basic stuff that you wouldn't think, like sleep's a big thing, like doing some type of supplementation. Like,
do you do any supplementation?
Yes,
for sleep?
Yes, absolutely. The one thing I do right now, a lot of vitamin D. I do... it's kind of like fish oils and like a cholesterol medication type of thing. I was experimenting with a few other things. I was using, ashwagandha. I was using Broccomax, which is kind of like a broccoli derivative that's supposed to help with digestion and a few other things. And again, it's just, I kind of experiment on myself too. So I'm not like suggesting everybody do this because.
Yeah, this is none of this is, yeah, this is not health like, advice or you should yeah, take this or is, try. You should seek professional
yes,
medical
absolutely.
Advice before taking anything.
And I think that's part of kind of what I've been doing is trying to figure out some of the things that work for me. Like I'll look at sleep and how does sleep affect my overall performance at work or with my family or whatever the case may be. And I've started like trying melatonin and just seeing how that works and using like. You know what? I'll say this, and this is just from my own personal experience. Any type of sleep aid, it works for me for a little bit. But then I end up in a situation where I have almost like an adverse reaction to it to where I'll wake up like probably 3 or 4 hours to the pill kicking in. And like it's your body's kind of like reacting to it. So it's like it wants to be awake, but you're pill is trying to tell you to be asleep. So you've got this weird kind of dichotomy going on. And so I've kind of avoided doing that recently. And so, but also looking at kind of tracking sleep metrics. What does that look like? What's your heart rate variability? What's your breathing? And so I have a sleep tracker that I'm using now that is keeping an eye on that and rating my score. So, and I think that sleep is a big one. I think diet. The one guy I follow right now, Brian Johnson, this is kind of his thing. He's just kind of a biohacker. He sold Venmo, PayPal for a whole bunch of money, and now he's using that money to basically become the most measured man in history. And I think he does everything. Like, he's trying to figure out how to regrow hair and how to work on regrowing gum. Like, all kinds of crazy stuff, which I'm not into. I'm not there yet. I got plenty of hair, so I'm going to be fine. My gums look great. I'm not worried.
Beautiful gums.
I've got gorgeous gums. But with that, it's his kind of takeaway from what he's been doing is sleep is a big thing. Diet, because he went from doing all kinds of like carnivore and like fast food and just eating that kind of stuff.
Do you think there is a specific, like each person, I would assume, like different, because a diet is just a way, it's a lifestyle of eating.
Yeah, yeah.
Essentially, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Anyone could say, I'm on this diet.
Yeah, I'm doing keto.
Carb heavy. You know, the ones have names, keto, carnivore, vegan, whatever it is. Do you think that to supplement for some of the nutritions, do you think, and I'm going to go into the back into like some crazy stuff with 3D printing, like the printing of meats or printing of foods, right? They've got the new 3D technology that they're printing. Do you think that that could ever be a viable solution for deficiencies in a person that you could genetically engineer a piece of food or something.
Yeah,
to help a person.
It's definitely kind of a fine line because like a lot of times, like I'll give you an example, like diabetics, like the reason they have a lot of issues is because they're failing to produce insulin. So a lot of that is synthetically produced to where they can use that as the substitute to help process sugar, whatever the case may be. That's a synthetic compound. So it's something that you can use to aid with basically overall health. When it gets into like food sources and food supplies, that's where I get a little bit more reticent because for me, I like to know what's in my food. I want to know what I'm eating because again, there's things that are happening nowadays, in my opinion, that you see a lot more allergies nowadays. You see a lot more people with intolerances, those types of things where I think getting to a natural food source is probably your best bet. Because, I mean, if you're eating Ho-Hos and drinking Pepsi, like, your health is probably not that great.
You're going to get stage 2 right. diabetes.
Yeah, exactly.
As Wilford Brimley says.
And I think with that, I think there's a fine line between what's good for synthetics and what's good for just like overall eating and stuff like that. And that's why for food sources, I try to tend to say like stick to more of the natural types of things.
The closer
like,
it is to the earth, yep. the better off you are. So with that in mind, from your perspective, being a dietitian, as a generality or a whole, what are three things that every person could be doing to better improve their health and their nutrition?
So when we were talking before about sleep, sleep is paramount. Like I think a lot of people underestimate how effective sleep is. And I've heard like athletes talk about this, where if sleep was not a normal process, it would be considered a substance enhancing. So I think, again, taking care of your sleep is one big thing. I think eating healthy in terms of, and again, it depends on you and your, what's going on with you. Like if you're diabetic, you're not going to eat as much processed sugar. You're not going to eat as much carbs because you're trying to balance how much is coming into your system. So I think eating to your, I want to say body type, but I'll just say to kind of more of your, I don't want to say personality because it's not your personality, but just who you
are.
Your genetics is, that's a good way to put it. And then the supplementation thing for me is, it's interesting, but again, you got to be careful with supplementation because you don't know who's selling the product. You know what I mean? Like who's trying to make money off of this? But I would say sleep, eating. And then again, I know people like to have a good time, but like limiting consumption of alcohol, I think is helpful as well too, because one, it's going to affect your sleep. I think two, it's going to be a situation where you're going to wake up the next day, you're going to make bad decisions because, you know what, I had a couple drinks last night, I'm going to go get a cheeseburger because I got to cure my hangover, whatever the case may be.
That's a good point. That's a really good point of the after effects of something you do. It may not be that initial act that you're doing, but it's the consequences, sub-consequences of said action. Lack of sleep, you don't want to get up, you're less mobile, all those kind of things. All right, so we've got sleep, and I agree with you on that one. Eat foods close to the earth,
yes. And
then supplement for potential deficiencies, but obviously know what you're taking, yes. Know who's selling it before you do it. Awesome. So I want to get into the weeds. Here's where I go rapid fire questions on some crazy things.
This is going to make me look like a bad dietitian, isn't it, Jeff?
I don't think so. All right. Have you ever had a client confess a secret food obsession?
No. Actually, no, I have not. No. No, nothing. I wouldn't say I've had a client, but I've heard of people with weird food. I don't want to say aversion, but like something that they'd prefer to eat. Like, and I've definitely with pregnant women, I've heard this more, and I've had some friends while they were pregnant would tell me like, yeah, I like eating chalk. You're like, wait, what?
Because
like
that goes back to the, what is it? TLC. Eating couch mattresses.
Yeah. But it's like it's a disorder called pica, which again it changes like the way that they're eating, and there's a kind of a hormone situation going on and just trying to get what your body needs. And so you just start eating these weird things. So it's not like any secret obsession, but it's a legitimate condition that a lot of pregnant women deal with as well.
I'm going to eat couch mattress. Delicious. All right. What vegetable would be most likely to start a fight?
Do you mean like a food fight, like something I can hit you with? Or do you mean
what
like...
What vegetable would be most likely to start a fight?
Like... If we're talking...
Not like me throwing it at you, but like what vegetable is like...
Like
hey,
what's a controversial?
Hey, asshole, I'm going to... Yeah.
Like... Because there's
not controversial, just what vegetable is going to start a fight?
All right, I'm mashed potatoes.
That's not a vegetable. That's a starch.
That's true. But I'm thinking more
about...
How
do you go mashed potatoes?
I think mashed potatoes, because if I'm going to start a fight with mashed potatoes, I'm like going to hit you with something that's going to stick on you.
But I'm not talking throwing food at somebody. Like, yeah, that's going to be like... If you've got like really thick, like old school mash, you're going to lunk it at someone. It's a rock.
If I'm still in the food fight vein, I'm going tomato then. I mean, and tomato could technically be considered fruit. So
it's,
I mean,
got seeds. It's a fruit.
I know,
bro.
But again, a lot of people, they're not putting it in with their breakfast cereal.
And
you know what I mean?
What folks didn't hear is that this guy said that if he had to live off a vegetable for a month, it'd be corn. Right?
Yeah.
It's from corn from the dietitian. So yeah. We're not even going to go into that one. He doesn't even know what vegetable starts food fights. All right, if you could crossbreed any two foods to create a superfood, what would you choose?
Ooh, that's a good one. So. I'm going to say there's a, I don't know how to pronounce this, and this is me being a bad dietitian, but I think it's Kyberry or Cyberry or whatever that is. Like that one has been like the super fruit for a long time. And I would use that one. And then I would do that probably. There's been some research on cherries and what they're doing with cherries. So I try to hybrid the two of those just to see what it would be like. And just to see, because a lot of inflammatory products in cherries that, again, with the kind of the super fruit of Kyberry, I'd be interested to see what that would
look like.
You
don't want to go like Willy Wonka style with a piece of gum that's like roast beef and
no.
potatoes and you get the full experience.
I'll use that for the food fight. I'll just throw the roast beef at him.
Throw the roast beef at him. That way, no bones. Don't make sure there's no bones in that. All right, last in the weeds question. Would you rather fight 100 miniature marshmallows or one giant broccoli florette? 100 mini marshmallows or a giant piece of broccoli?
How big is the broccoli? Are we talking?
We're talking like.
Is this 12 feet?
Yeah, like a ginormous piece of broccoli. Like the state fair, you're going to see the pumpkins, but like think broccoli.
Okay.
Or 100 miniature marshmallows.
Okay. Do I have a choice of weapon?
Sure.
Because if I got to cut down broccoli, I need like a sickle or something, or maybe.
All right, so okay, pick a weapon, and then which one would you fight?
I feel like I'm going broccoli. I feel like I'm going broccoli.
I'm scared of those marshmallows.
Man, I feel like they're gonna come back. I've seen Ghostbusters, man. I know what happens.
You know, they can get like every orifice and like.
That's what
all
I'm saying.
You're gonna suffocate.
That's what I'm saying.
Marshmallows.
Absolutely, I'm not going to get some marshmallow.
You ever play that game when you start shoving the marshmallows in your mouth? Chubby Bunny?
No, I've not.
You ever played Chubby Bunny?
No, but I think I'm going to try this with my kids now.
I was going to say, do it with the kids. They got to say Chubby Bunny, and every time you got to shove a marshmallow until you can't say Chubby Bunny anymore.
Okay, yeah.
But now I think about 100 mini marshmallows.
Yeah, that's not. Yeah, I'm definitely sticking with broccoli.
Broccoli, for sure. All right, that's all I've got for today. Thank you, Ryan. Appreciate your time.
You're welcome,
coming
sir.
In. And as always, stay in touch.
HospitalityChain.com, the world's first online hub designed for the hospitality, culinary, and catering industry. From leading food and beverage brands to professional food service equipment, HospitalityChain.com makes sourcing simple. Search, select, buy direct, and save all in one global marketplace.